Now, Sergeant, you said that you knew him as well as you knew most inmates. I think it would be very helpful to everybody if you would describe in your own words how well you get to know inmates, and you can give the different degrees.
Now, primarily, it depends on how closely you're associated with the inmate. If you're working, if you're a correction officer and you have a gang of men, 10, 15, 20 men, and you work with these men every day in a particular area, you get to know these men very well. In other words, it's one thing if you're working with a different group of people every day, but if you're working with the same group day in and day out, you get to know these people, and they also get to know you. I knew inmates this well. I knew other inmates just as passing individuals. I knew other inmates well because they were the type of individual that seemed or felt that they had problems frequently, and they would come to me, and you get to know these individuals.
I'd like to know what you can do to help an inmate with a problem. If an inmate comes to you and tells you he has a family problem, his wife isn't writing him, that must be a concern.
This is a complaint that I do get occasionally.
What can you do about that?
That's the one thing that I do is, number one, I talk to the individual. I try to find out just what it is that he is concerned about. If it involves family, and it frequently does, I relay this information to one of our chaplains. We have a Protestant chaplain, a Catholic chaplain, and a Jewish chaplain. And depending on the denomination that the inmate follows, this would be the chaplain that I would notify of his particular problem.
Are you even permitted to try to contact the inmate's family?
I individually am not, no.
And yet you're the man that the inmate has come to.
Yes, I'm the man that the inmate comes to, but also I would like to say that there's a great deal of rapport between most inmates and most chaplains also.
But are there some inmates who now have adopted faiths other than the Catholic, Protestant, and Jewish faiths?
Well, there always was. There always were individuals that adopted faiths other than the three I just mentioned.
Well, you have had an increase in the Islamic faith.
That's correct. Yes.
And have any Muslims ever confided family problems to you, Sergeant?
To be perfectly honest, I can't ever recall a man who I knew as being a Muslim actually coming to me with family problems. There are Muslim ministers that come into the institution normally every week. Now, there may be some possibility here. I'm not sure, though.
Now, I've been talking up to now about inmate problems. I'd like to turn to the subject of correction officer problems. Let's start with the question of whether the correction officers had problems and frustrations of their own before the uprising.
Certainly correction officers had problems and concerns and anxieties before, during, and after. I mean, it's a tough job. It's a tough way to make a living.
And would you tell us what these problems are?
Well, believe it or not, one of the bigger concerns that many employees confide in me with, and I feel the same way, is most employees are disturbed by the usually poor light that the news media puts us in. I mean, many occasions we've been concerned about this. Also, there's awareness on the part of most employees that there's a certain danger involved in this type of a job. It creates a certain anxiety. This is one of those things which we learn to live with. It's not easy, but we learn.
Could you stop for a moment, Sergeant?
Yes.
The court reporter has to change his tape.
Okay.
WXXI, Rochester, New York.
So we have a momentary break in the proceedings here of the New York State Special Commission on Attica. The broadcast coming to you live over WXXI Channel 21 in Rochester, New York, from their studio in Rochester. And the witness now testifying is Sergeant James Cochran, a correction officer at Attica, who's been in the service for a number of years and whose father before him was a correction officer at the Attica Institution. The hearings will continue in just a moment, and following the testimony of Sergeant Cochran, we'll hear from an inmate who spent 19 years at Attica. Now we are ready to resume the questioning, and once again, the Chief Counsel, Arthur Lyman.
Are we ready? All right. Do you recall where you were in listing the frustrations of correction officers? You mentioned
the two important ones, the level of danger that they feel is involved in the job, and the bad press that most of us feel we're getting. I've already mentioned this. In the institution itself, there were two areas that most officers relayed to me a feeling of a frustration: communication and what they called backing. First, communications. Many officers felt that they were not fully or adequately informed as far as what was going on in the facility. Time passed, it may have been a complaint, and a strong one. I have seen recently improvement in this direction. There are what I feel effective means and efforts put in this direction as far as staff meetings, top administrators relaying information to us, explaining the different types of things that need explaining. I have definitely seen improvement in this area, and I'm glad to see it. Backing. There was a feeling on the part of many officers that inmates could get away with almost anything. The administration did not support the enforcement of their own rules. I'd like to say that this is a matter of degree, and it would depend on the situation. It would also depend on the officer who you happen to be talking to. It was valid to a degree. I have also seen improvement, steady improvement in this direction to correct this problem. I am satisfied that they are going in the right direction.
What do you mean when about not being backed up? Could you describe that in a little more detail?
Many officers would feel that an inmate would disobey a particular regulation. The officer would report this individual, which he understood was his job anyway. The information would go through the normal channels, and then, boom, the next day, the inmate would be right back there facing the very same officer doing the very same thing he was the day before. No change had been brought about in the individual.
And what effect did that have?
Well, it was very frustrating.
Was it embarrassing?
I don't know if it was embarrassing or not, but it made the job of an officer difficult, more difficult.
We've heard from inmates about the fact that when decisions were made which affected them on parole and sentencing, they weren't given explanations. Were officers given explanations when they would write up an inmate as to why the board did not punish the inmate?
I don't recall specifically whether this was done or not, but I do know that supervisors were informed to inform the officers that when you report a misbehavior, your responsibility ends. In other words, you report the individual goes before a disciplinary group, either one individual, which it was before, the disturbance, and now they've got a setup where they have three or four employees. Once you make the report, your responsibility is over. We will try to effect a change in the man's behavior.
Now,
in this respect, yes.
Now, the officer wouldn't appear before the board?
No, the officer that made the report did not appear before the disciplinary proceedings. No.
And the officer who made the report would not make a recommendation as to punishment?
He could put recommendations either on the report or with a supplemental report. He could recommend, yes.
Did you have any say over whether or not your men would write up a report?
I never interfered with, you know, as far as saying you can or you cannot make a report, unless I felt that there was a distinct wrong as far as the inmate being locked up. In other words, if this was a mistake and it was apparent to me that it was a mistake, well, then certainly I would intercede. There were several occasions, not many, but a few.
And how would you even know that it was a mistake?
How would I know that it was a mistake? Normally, if a man is accused of something that he knows in his mind that he definitely did not do, he's going to holler. He's going to get to somebody. And in my particular position, about the first man he hollers for is a sergeant in the block. Now, most every sergeant, I'm sure, operates the same way. You go down, you talk to the individual. Occasionally, and I say occasionally, he would shed light on the situation, which would mean that, hey, we got to make a slight adjustment here.
And would it help if this was an inmate in whom you had confidence?
Possibly this might help, but every individual that I went to, I would listen to what he had to say. This is the most important thing.
Now, you said that officers feel unhappy about the treatment that they have received in the press.
Absolutely.
Would you amplify on that?
Well, mainly recently, these charges of brutality, I realize they're only charges, but it has been said so many times, and it has been brought to the attention of so many people that these accusations have been made, that there's a feeling that possibly these things are believable. And it certainly makes a difference how something is written. Also, I would like to say this. I've been in this business 14 years.
Has the amplifier gone off? You were about to continue your statement,
right,
that you've been in the business for 14 years.
I've been in this business for 14 years, and I can honestly say I have never seen brutality on the part of any officer towards any inmate. There is brutality in these facilities, but every case of what I consider brutality has been a situation of brutality perpetrated upon one inmate by another inmate. This is the only brutality I've seen, and I can say this honestly.
Sergeant, officers, in feeling badly about their press coverage, are really saying that they feel that they're not being afforded the respect that they're entitled to for this difficult job. Isn't that so? That's a fair description.
It's got to a point where they no longer even expect to get this, but they ask one thing, try to put us in a better light. In other words, when these charges are related in the news media, make it absolutely certain that these are charges made by individuals within the facility.
What I was trying to find out is whether in this feeling about the fact that correction officers are no longer afforded due respect, you can sympathize with the feelings of some of the inmates that conditions ought to be such that they can have feelings of respect.
You're talking about two things now. You're talking about
I'm asking whether or not it gives you some better understanding about these feelings that they express so many times.
Yeah, certainly, both inmates and officers relay feelings of lack of respect for themselves. Certainly.
Now, Sergeant, you mentioned security. Were the officers at Attica concerned about their security prior to the uprising?
Are you referring to mechanical security?
All types.
Well, let's take it one at a time. Mechanical security, we had a great deal of faith in the mechanical security at Attica prior to the disturbance.
Are you saying that you placed reliance in the fact that the locked gates would hold?
Yes, I am. Yes, I am. As far as security, the type of security, in other words, the individual, the way he utilizes the tools that he has available to him, I felt it was quite good. All officers were concerned about security. Most did a pretty good job. The type of thing that concerned many officers prior to the disturbance was the change in inmate mood prior to the disturbance, certain activities and signs which made officers and staff feel that something wasn't right. And I'm referring to more incidents where inmates would challenge authorities of officers and other members of the staff. I'm talking about the particular makeup of the type of groups that would meet in the yard. You have 4 yards at Attica. And normally, before the disturbance, groups of inmates would meet, but it would be like a group of inmates from New York, or a group of black inmates that may belong to a particular religion, or a group of Spanish inmates that felt they had something in common. Prior to, and I'm not sure how long a period, all of a sudden the particular makeup of these groups changed. In other words, a group would have 3 or 4 of the different factions involved within that particular group, which wasn't normal. It was a change, and gee, what did this mean?
Did you regard this unity as a threat to your security?
We felt it did.
Did you regard these groups themselves, such as the Muslims or Panthers or Young Lords, as threats to your security?
Some groups are more militant than others. Some groups preach violence, some don't. Some are closer together than others.
How did you know whether the group was preaching violence?
It was difficult. The only way you would know is if you could stand right next to this particular group. There were incidents where officers overheard conversations that were related at these meetings. There were situations where written material was actually appropriated, which indicated that there were strong thoughts and feelings in this direction by certain factions of the inmate population.
Well, did you understand, did you think that you understood what would bring an inmate who belonged to no group when he entered the institution to become a Muslim when he entered there, or to join the Young Lords when he entered there?
Well, it was an influence type of thing. In other words, a particular man would come to prison, and all of a sudden he's thrown in among a group of men. They come from different surroundings, different political philosophies, or what have you.
Did you think that the institution provided a substitute in terms of programming or relationships that would...
There were programs available in the facility. There was room for improvement, but also there were programs available which individuals did not avail themselves of to the fullest extent. In other words, a lot of these programs, these men are actually forced into. There's a certain amount of individual decision involved.
Were you apprehensive yourself about the fact that Attica might explode?
I was apprehensive to the extent that I felt we were going to have serious difficulties. I never felt that it could be of the extreme level that it finally turned out it was.
Well, did you manifest that apprehension in a way?
Did I manifest this apprehension? Just what do you mean by manifest
this apprehension? Well, did you start leaving your wallet home?
Yes. Before the disturbance, I myself quit carrying my wallet into the institution. That's right.
Now, did you have any riot training at Attica?
I never had riot training at Attica, no.
Was there any such course available at Attica?
There were attempts at riot training. I, as an individual, hadn't gotten involved in it.
Well, now, do you in any way identify your security with the well-being of the inmates? Do you know what I mean by that?
Well, security, you know, it goes a long way.
I mean, let me be more specific. Let me be more specific. You're in contact at any time of the day with many, many more inmates than there are correction officers around.
Absolutely.
And your nightstick, as you have indicated before, is nothing more than a symbol, really. Now, my question really was, did you feel that the security of correction officers in an institution in which there is inevitably a larger number of inmates, many with histories of violent crimes than there are correction officers, depends on your developing in these inmates a sense of respect and a feeling that all of the legitimate grievances which you yourself acknowledge are being attended to?
No, this is a very fair statement, absolutely.
Now, you said that as you sat there, you took your left your wallet home, there was no riot training being given at Attica, there wasn't really any change being made at that time in the conditions, was there?
I wouldn't go so far as to say there were no changes in the conditions.
But they were minimal
right.
For the inmates.
I think I could go along with it.
And did you feel that you were just sort of sitting there impotently watching the inevitable collision?
Well, it's always a possibility when you are in a correctional facility, whether it's one individual or more than one, that once this individual gets the urge to do harm to you, he's going to do harm to you. So this is something that you have to live with in this business.
Now, I just have a few more questions. First, you've seen inmates come and go from Attica.
Yes.
You've seen inmates leave and then return for violating parole or for a new crime.
Yes, I have.
Does that affect you in any way?
It affects me to the effect that over the years, I've worked closely with many inmates, and they would approach their day of release from the facility. And they'd look me in the eye, and they'd, believe me, they'd convince me, there's no way that I'm coming back. And I was convinced. I mean, a month later, 2 months later, here this man comes walking back through the front gate. This is one thing that puzzled me over the years, why they keep coming back.
After you see this over and over again, do you believe in rehabilitation?
I believe that rehabilitation has to come from within. Provide the tools, but understand that rehabilitation is an individual decision. It comes from within more than anything else.
Now, these individuals are in the prison because they couldn't make it on their own. Do you think that you're doing enough to motivate somebody so that if it can come from within?
I think that there is room for improvement in this area. I think that we can give them more tools.
And do you believe, having been in this system for this period of time, that all inmates belong in a maximum security institution who are now at Attica?
I can only speak of Attica. It is my feeling, and only mine, that there are some inmates within Attica that could get by with less than maximum security, as there are many inmates within Attica that need maximum security.
Sergeant, what recommendations would you make for change at Attica?
I'm really not prepared to make any recommendations for changes at Attica. I have a feeling that the department at present is working in this direction.
How is Attica different today from pre-September 9?
There are attempts at more programs. There's changes either in the process of being effective or have already been affected as far as things that inmates are allowed to do, things that they're allowed to have in mechanical type of thing within the institution. It's been shored up as far as mechanical security is concerned. We have, when you consider the inmate to officer ratio, we have more employees now than we had before. But also, there is more activity involving the institution today that draws officers from the facility where they are not working with the inmates. Things like court appearances, which require officer escorts. Your own commission requires officers every day to work with you. This type of thing. All officers are not involved specifically working with the inmates.
Sergeant, you said that there was more programming, but you've also have said over and over again that more could be done. Do you think that you have enough support from the public to obtain the funds and the tools to give the inmates more programming, more counseling, and better conditions?
There is no doubt in my mind that there never was, and at this particular date, there are not enough funds. There has not been enough funds appropriated for the Department of Correctional Services. This is my opinion as an individual. The department has always been treated as a stepchild. In other words, with a low one on the rung of priorities. We get what's left over.
Do you feel jeopardized by this public apathy?
I feel jeopardized by this apathy, certainly, if this is where the problem is.
I have no further questions.
Sergeant Cochran, I have just one question myself.